Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today's guest, Connor Everts, believes we are in the beginning stages of a revolution to democratize California's water system. Connor Everts has been working on water issues for 38 years. He says he's never seen this kind of interest and awareness. People are waking up. Now, we know that we're in a dire situation. Climate scientists say we might be in the worst arid spell in 1,200 years, and there's no relief in sight. So what are the solutions? What are the most effective ways to conserve water, and what policies should be put in place? Today we are joined by Connor Everts, co-facilitator at the Environmental Water Caucus. Their mission is to achieve sustainable water management solutions for all Californians. Connor is also executive director of the Southern California Watershed Alliance and co-chair of the DESAL Response Group. And Connor joins us from Los Angeles. Hi, Connor. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Good morning. We're also joined by Daniel Beard, former commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation and author of the book Deadbeat Dams, Why We Should Abolish the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation and Tear Down Glen Canyon Dam. In a Sacramento Bee op-ed, Daniel says it's time for the federal government to step in. And Daniel joins us from NPR studios in Washington, D.C. Hi, Daniel. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Rose. It's wonderful to be back.
It's great to have you back. So, Connor, I want to start off with you because you have worked on water issues for decades, and you say that you have never seen this kind of interest and awareness. And you believe that we're in the beginning stages of a revolution to democratize water?
I think we have to be, because we put ourselves in the situation where things aren't changing quickly enough. You know, while I said we've never had this kind of interest, I have to say I've never heard more talk and less action at the same time. And I was at the Metropolitan Water District, the big wholesaler for most of Southern California yesterday, and they were actually, ironically, and I'm happy to be on with Dan Beard, talking about building a second Diamond Valley, which is a huge reservoir that they built at a cost of well over $3 billion and had a lot of political fiascos, which is a great story. But instead of expanding their turf removal program, which has been so successful that they're talking about putting $150 million into it to backfill it, they're talking about cutting it back and restricting it because it's too successful at this point. But they'd rather invest in the solutions of the last century, which is to build more infrastructure, which with climate change makes absolutely no sense.
Hmm. Well, we'll go into that more in detail, but can you elaborate a bit more on just what you're seeing out there? You're getting interview requests from international news organizations. You're getting questions from people who never really thought about these issues.
So what I'm actually hearing from the public in general, from people on the street who stop me and now are suddenly interested in water in a way they weren't before, is really a response to industrial agriculture and the fact that they aren't even metered or monitored. And while we're being told to save, you know, a range, but statewide of 25% by the end of next February, ag is not restricted, and people are really upset about that. So I think that gives us an opportunity to really change the way we allocate water rights and the way we deal with groundwater in the state, which is behind everybody else in the country.
And Daniel, I'm sorry, your recent op-ed is in the San Jose Mercury News. You had another one in the SAC-B a couple weeks ago. What are your thoughts about what you're seeing just in terms of public awareness and interest in these issues?
I've never seen so much interest. I guess I joined Connor. We both must have started on the same day because I've been at this 38 years as well, and became involved in 1977. Coincidentally, there was a drought in California. I've never seen so much interest. I published the book in early March. It became available, and I started to go around college campuses and speak, and I was speaking to crowds of 100 people or more, and I can't tell you what a surprise that was. As Connor knows, it's difficult to get 100 people to even say the word water, much less sit in the audience and listen to somebody talk about it. So it's a unique opportunity, and we need to take advantage of the opportunity.
So where should we start? Because as you both know, you've been on our show recently. We've done 2-week-long series on water issues. We've been covering these issues for years. We've talked about everything from what if we ate as if food mattered, the bottled water industry, the politics behind water. And we have a huge state. So many different factors. Dan, you said that you don't really like it when people say it's a complex system because then you can kind of throw your arms in the air and say it's too difficult to solve these problems. But when we talk about solutions, where should that conversation begin?
Oh, I think it has to begin with pricing water at a level that somewhat approaches its true value. We have been subsidizing water, both in the agricultural sector and with M&I water users, for decades. And we are literally taking billions of dollars out of our pockets and handing it to farming interests and to many communities and power users. And I think that's just the wrong way to go. I think that we have to get over this concept that water should be free and abundant and clean, and recognize that water is a valuable commodity and it ought to be priced somewhere near its value. I'm not delusional to think that we're going to charge full cost for water, but we ought to be raising the water price of water, both to urban water users and especially to agricultural water users.
How is it priced today?
In many cases, it isn't. In many cases, we give it away for free. Imperial Valley farmers receive water at virtually no cost. We go through a complex set of subsidy calculations and make water available to farming interests at rock-bottom prices, pennies on a dollar. You know, it may cost us $100 million to deliver water, and we charge $2 million for it. So the $98 is the form of the subsidy, and that's picked up by taxpayers. I just think it's the most important thing that we can do, and it's what the bottled water industry showed us. You know, you had a wonderful program on that, and bottled water industry shows us that water is valuable. It's very valuable. It's a tremendously valuable product that, you know, you can make a profit off of, and Pepsi and Coca-Cola are doing that right now. Water is something that we should be pricing. That's the first step. The second step is we ought to be measuring what we use. You know, there are still communities in California where they don't measure water use. There are no water meters. It's crazy. Most agricultural water users most of them in California now are pretty sophisticated in the way that they measure their water use, but not communities. And I think that we have to address that problem. And then I think we have to price water in our communities, use tiered pricing systems and others where we charge more for the people who use more ought to pay more.
And Daniel, we did a show also about the politics behind water and the interests that have a lot of power in Sacramento. In order to change the pricing, you would need some strong political will, right? So how do you get there given the political climate we're in?
Well, the op-ed piece that we published in the San Jose Mercury over the weekend was directed at that. One of the most deafening right now, there's virtually no leadership from the Obama administration and the Interior Department on the California drought. They're simply absent. They've been going around. They seem content to plan and promote surface water projects and listen to the needs of Central Valley agricultural water interests. And they seem to be looking at the rest of California and just shrugging their shoulders. And I think it's wrong. I think the president ought to use the powers that he has to convene a group to address the current drought and see what can be done. We did the same thing when we were when we had a jobs problem in 2008, and the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act was passed. The president provided leadership by investing and trying to address these problems. I think he ought to be providing a developing and convening a group, a task force to address water relief for California communities. And they should identify those projects that can be done quickly to address problems.
That is Daniel Beard. He's former commissioner of the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation and author of Deadbeat Dams. He's got an op-ed in the San Jose Mercury News about the federal government. He believes the federal government should get involved and help California. Pricing is at the top of Daniel's list. Connor Everts is co-facilitator at the Environmental Water Caucus. Connor, you believe that we should look to Australia for solutions. And talk a little bit about how Australia dealt with pricing, because I understand the water became pretty expensive there and the price of water went up. How did they do it and what was the result?
Well, they did, you know, at first, and it took them almost 10 years out of a 12-year millennium drought to actually make the real changes they needed to do with water rights. But what they did do that made it very interesting is that they invested in everything. This is kind of the California policy. Let's not have any sense of priorities. Let's not look at climate change. Let's not look at the most efficient or cost-effective investment. Let's do everything. So in the midst of crisis, that's what people do. Australia built six multi-billion-dollar desalination plants. Four of those now sit idle, but they're still paying for them. Some of them were private as well. So there was a very high cost, which exacerbated the business model we have now for water agencies, is when you use less water and conservation is successful because their fixed costs are so high and they don't adjust those, then rates go up again. And eventually that becomes a spiral, and what happened in Australia is the price of water really did get high enough that people wanted to get off utility water, put in large cisterns, just so long as their rugby fields could be kept green. They were happy and they adopted, as the governor called for, a conservation ethic. But I do have to say, I totally agree with Dan. It's as complex or as easy as you want to make the issues, and they can be quite easy, and that's the way they should be explained. The agencies try to make them as complex as possible. However, the revolutionary part comes in is the inequities. So there are those, and the panel I was on in the World Bank a couple weeks ago, we heard from India, Africa, Mexico, and Brazil, all of which have real water issues. California's essentially exacerbated or manufactured a much worse crisis than it would have been if we had triggered for drought before. But before the drought started, there were almost 2 million people without access to safe, clean, and affordable drinking water, which forced us to pass a human right to water. So at the very bottom end, I think there are people who do deserve water, who use the very least, the minimum amount. And that should be free. And I disagreed with the former, Pat Mulroy, the former general manager of Las Vegas and Southern Nevada on that issue, and probably with the World Bank as well. But India, in Southern India, the manager, that's what they had done. So until people really have access to drinking water and you have these inequities, both in rural, along the 99 in the San Joaquin Valley with nitrates, and in urban areas with a legacy of pollution from companies that have abandoned those areas, like in Maywood, we have another set of issues that can't just be solved by pricing. But you get up to the higher levels, these higher tiers, and then we definitely should hit them hard. We have a recent court case that was on appeal that we lost, what's called 218, which is now we're going to have to figure out a new way of pricing. But I think one of the things we really have to change is how we pay for and value water. And that bottled water, people are willing to pay over $1 million an acre foot being roughly a third of 1 million gallons, how we talk about water supply. Whereas Dan said, you know, people just pay the pumping cost or just get water delivered to them at the basic level. So why should they value it or the crops they grow?
And do you want to just quickly talk about your experience at the World Bank, Connor? Because you said that you felt kind of embarrassed talking about California's water system with officials from so many other countries. And you say that we can actually learn from some of those countries.
Well, you know, I felt embarrassed in two ways. I felt embarrassed, one, is that we have third world drinking conditions in California and we shouldn't.
What do you mean by that?
So there are people without access to clean drinking water, without access to wastewater facilities. And often those very people in the Central Valley have beautiful, clean, when there's snow melt, water going right by them, going to industrial agriculture in the rest of Southern California, and they don't have any access to that water. So those that are dependent on polluted groundwater have a real problem. There are also places, you know, while we don't have meters everywhere, we also don't have access to sanitary facilities everywhere. So another group that I helped found, the Environmental Justice Coalition for Water, EJCW.org, has done a film as a follow-up on a book we did called Thirsty for Justice, and we're showing that documentary to organize people around these issues. So they realize even here in California, we have this sense of entitlement for some and sense of inequity where they don't have access to it in the others, and that's what I mean by the third world conditions. Mm-hmm.
Connor Everts is co-facilitator at the Environmental Water Caucus. Their mission is to achieve sustainable water management solutions for all of the state's residents. Daniel Beard is former commissioner of the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation and author of Deadbeat Dams, Why We Should Abolish the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation and Tear Down Glen Canyon Dam. Today, we are talking about solutions to our water crisis. We've done so many shows about these issues, agriculture, bottled water, the politics behind water. And so what are your thoughts on solutions? So far, we've been talking about pricing water, measuring how much water is actually used, because at this point, we don't really know. A lot of people say that the new groundwater rules will change that. So what would you add to the mix in terms of solutions, and what questions do you have about all of the articles that you've probably been reading, the stories you've been hearing? And have you heard many solutions in those pieces? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And then with all the coverage you've been hearing and seeing, what else is still missing? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's go to Douglas, who's with the Monterey Bay Conservancy. Hi, Douglas. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. We've spoken before, and I'm trying to move to the area where my chimes are to set the mood here.
I remember.
Also, you know, I was very interested to hear the longevity of your. I was very impressed by the longevity of your two different panel participants. But I think I outdo them actually, because 1970 seems to be around 45 years ago, when as a 21-year-old I first became involved in the groundwater situation. And that was by actually being from San Francisco in the Bay Area, a well owner and user in the Santa Cruz Mountains for the first time, 21 years old. There's really only one way to it. Well, you know, you're mentioning President Obama. I think what we have to do is direct our attentions to our governor and our natural resources secretary. And there are the powers that for this new groundwater legislation. It doesn't change the law at all. What it does is just puts a timetable with which I think his name is Famiglietti, or he wrote that article about 1 year's water left in California, which he says that, you know, the timeline, you know, we got to do this immediately. And I don't see the timeline being established here, which is going to require the actions on the that we need, you know, very quickly. Now, I have a proposal for the Monterey Bay, which Mark Reisner a solution for 20 years, actually, which he identified in the year 1998 when he appeared here as the worst saltwater intrusion problem caused by what I term the Waterbury Ponzi scheme, which has been operative here for decades, basically, where we basically expropriate and export vast amounts of groundwater, which is basically to retire purchase. There's, for example, 25% of the farmland in a PDWMA, 8,000 acres, which would save 24,000 acre feet a year, would cost $400 million.
Well, Douglas, thank you for the call. And let's get a comment on Governor Brown. Daniel, what are your thoughts on Governor Brown's actions on the drought so far? These mandatory solutions include a 25% reduction in water usage in urban areas, replacing 50 million square feet of lawns throughout the state with drought-tolerant landscaping in partnership with the local government. So far, what are your thoughts on these mandatory restrictions?
Well, I have two reactions to the governor, one positive, one negative. I think that he's shown leadership unlike the Obama administration. He's stepped forward, he's taken responsibility, and he's trying to show a path forward. Unfortunately, I disagree with a number of the paths that he has suggested. He seems infatuated with building a Delta facility to move water we don't have at a cost of $25 to $35 billion further south to meet the needs of agriculture. And I think he really missed the mark by not focusing more on agriculture and their need to step up to the plate in the middle of this drought. So I have a mixed reaction to what the governor has done. He's provided leadership, but unfortunately I think he's been wrong in a couple of important areas.
What could the governor do on agriculture? And what would you like to see him do?
What would I like to see him do?
Yes.
I would like to see him fast-track the groundwater legislation regulations. I would like to see him raise the price of and impose a tax or suggest a tax or some other kind of fee on water used for agricultural purposes. And I'd like to see him take every effort he could to remove subsidies that we impose on water. I think he has to provide leadership. I also think that he needs to promote wastewater reuse. We send billions of gallons of water every year into the Pacific Ocean, and it's water that we should be reusing in some ways. And we do this in some communities, but we don't do it enough. And I think that it's a source of water that can help us meet some immediate needs. And that was part of what was in the op-ed piece in the San Jose Mercury to try to encourage the federal administration as well as the governor to promote wastewater reuse.
And Daniel, in your piece, you write that the Obama administration and Interior Department officials have been absent as Californians grapple with the drought. You write they seem content to plan and promote surface water projects that won't contribute a drop of water for 20 to 25 years and will cost taxpayers billions of dollars. I haven't really heard many people talk about what the Obama administration should or could do about the drought. So what would you like to see it do?
Well, I find it fascinating that we're in the middle of the worst drought in California's history, the worst drought in, you know, 1,000 years. And where is the federal administration at this point? They're nowhere. They're absolutely silent. They're content to sit back and continue to plan and promote surface water projects that won't do anything to address water problems for 20 to 25 years. Connor mentioned in the beginning that he was at the Met meetings this weekend where they talked about the need for an additional reservoir facility. I think that's almost criminal. Here we are. There are things that the Met can be doing to address problems right now. And instead, they sit back and say, well, we ought to, you know, think about building another reservoir and spending billions of dollars to do it. And it takes 20 to 25 years before you get one single drop out of those reservoirs. I think surface water storage is a dinosaur. The fact is, it's an inferior way to store water. It has a place in our future, but it has a very small place. What we need to do is utilize other tools. The engineering community and many of the water leaders that we have are infatuated with reservoirs, and I'm trying to think of another word other than stupid. I think it's very short-sighted because surface water storage is a dinosaur.
Well, hold that thought. And after the break, I'd like to get specifics on what the Obama administration can do. And then, Connor, I'll also ask you the same question and get your assessment of what Governor Brown has done so far. Today, we are talking about solutions to California's water crisis. We'll be back after this.
And you are listening to Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio in San Francisco. I'm Matt Martin, here with Your Call producer Nock Nguyen. 2 minutes to ask for your support on the first day of KALW's May membership campaign. We're off to a great start because listeners know this is how it works. How do you have independent information? How do you make sure there's an exchange of ideas? How do you make sure that the most important issues in our world are being covered intelligently and in depth? It's through listener-supported media. Be the next person to make a call at 800-525-9917 or to click at KALW.org.
Thank you, Matt, and thanks to all our listeners. You know, we've been working really hard on the show here to bring you two full weeks of coverage of California's drought. We feel this issue, like you, is one of the most important issues we're grappling with now. We've brought you independent, in-depth analysis critical information, but, you know, we're also focused on solutions and what we can do about this. And our listeners are a part of the solutions. So we love hearing from you on the program, and there's nothing better than listener-supported radio.
800-525-9917 or kalw.org. We always welcome your comments, and we got one knocked just now on the website. Peter Chung in Oakland gave his support, and he said, it's like air and water. If you are someone for whom independent ideas and information are like that, where if you don't have them, you feel like I'm missing them, I need them here, you know the companion that public radio and KALW in particular provides in your life, that brain food that makes you feel like I'm connected to what's happening in my world and I can be part of it. Your active participation makes that possible. Be the next person to call and support this kind of programming, 800-525-9917 or KALW.org. Thank you so much. Now, back to Rose.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with Sven Beckert, out with a book, The Empire of Cotton. And then we'll be talking with Mary Doerr. She is the documentarian behind the amazing film She's Beautiful When She's Angry. And on Friday, journalist Andrew Coburn will be here to talk about his latest book, Kill Chain, The Rise of the High-Tech Assassins. Today, we are continuing our water series by talking about solutions. We know the situation is dire. We've done so many shows, from bottled water to what if we ate as if water mattered. Today, we're talking about what changes we need to see. With Daniel Beard, former commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation and author of the book Deadbeat Dams, Why We Should Abolish the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation and Tear Down Glen Canyon Dam. In a recent San Jose Mercury op-ed, Dan says it's time for the federal government to step in. We're also joined by Connor Everts, co-facilitator at the Environmental Water Caucus, whose mission is to achieve sustainable water management solutions for all Californians. Connor is also executive director of the Southern California Watershed Alliance and co-chair of the DSAL Response Group. And we've got full lines. We'll get to calls in just a minute. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So, Dan, because this is not getting much attention, the federal government really needing to step in, what could the Obama administration do?
Well, I think the first thing it could do is provide leadership. You know, the president has the ability, the convening ability, and there's something like 23 federal agencies with water as their primary purpose. Right now, the federal agencies aren't coordinated in the way they're trying to address the problem. Some of them are individually doing a few modest things, but they're not jumping in as I think that they should be. He should be convening White House-level discussion groups and trying to put together a battle plan in conjunction with Governor Brown and the agencies in California on how we can begin to address this problem. But I also think that those discussions, you know, there are things that we can do for the next year or the next 2 years. But another important thing that they have to do is that they have to look for the systemic changes that they need to make down the road, the kind of policy changes that they need to make at the federal level so that they assist states like California to be able to address the problem. You know, this current drought is not isolated just to California. Nevada, Arizona, Colorado, and even Utah have severe problems. And I'm just, in one sense, I'm flabbergasted that the Obama administration hasn't stepped forward and tried to provide leadership in this area. It's sort of the same old approaches, and they just haven't shown any willingness to want to get involved and try to assist California's cities and towns to address these problems.
Connor, what are your thoughts on that and on the Obama administration getting involved?
So, you know, this is back to the future, and Dan knows this well, but the process, the collaborative process we did where we were supposed to get better together was called CalFed. That was just one of another series, which has ended up with this battle, which is really, to make it simple, between supply and demand. You know, the solutions of the last two centuries were provide more supply, ignore the impacts, and don't make a link between the demand. Now, water has become a commodity. There's, you know, thousands of large water agencies expecting revenue out of this, and that model is broken. So if EPA stepped in and said they were going to deal with the water quality, which actually means the flows that could come out of the delta, where we have fish going extinct, and they make fun of the small, and they call it ugly delta smelt, but it's the bottom of the food chain, which means we're also going to lose salmon and steelhead, which people make a living off of and fishermen have lived on for many years. That's happening when they start trucking fish, salmon, in tankers and driving them to the ocean, and the rivers are supposed to go back up, and the historic creeks like Ishi's Deer Creek are only seeing one or two fish come back, and it's mostly rocks, not water. Our priorities are upside down, and the EPA could come in and do what they were going to do back in the 90s and establish that. They could also make priorities in terms of the energy and greenhouse gas link here. So the governor talks a lot about greenhouse gases, but as long as you're promoting dams, new dams, which would be slabs of concrete in the air without any water behind them, or other fantastical ideas like desalination, which San Diego region invested $1 billion in and hasn't helped it at all during the drought and has huge environmental and energy impacts, we're not moving forward. The places we could do something is they could help promote the recycled water that Dan was talking about. We dump 2.7 million acre feet into the ocean every year, embedded with energy in Southern California. All that could be used just not for irrigation, but for groundwater recharge. LA uses only 1 or 2%. That's a major source of water if we can get past the politics of it. And EPA should be right there with us promoting it. The Bureau of Reclamation, I agree with Dan, they've outlived their usefulness. But as long as they are making settlements with large ag agencies with junior rights, who want to perfect them through the settlement, Westlands, we're not going to move forward. We've got toxic soils we need to let go idle and fallow. And this isn't a drought. This is permanent climate change, and we should react to it like Australia did when they realized they were on the bleeding edge. And then we may have floods in the midst of the dry as well, and we have to be prepared to capture water as well, and EPA should invest in that. We should really change the way we think about water, and the solutions are right in front of us, and they're as simple as continuing to subsidize turf replacement, doing a good job of rethinking the kind of societal image of how we think of our front lawns, and that is happening. People want to change, and people save water, not agencies.
Connor Everts is co-facilitator of the Environmental Water Caucus, and Daniel Beard is former commissioner of the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation and author of Deadbeat Dams. We've got a lot of calls, and I'm hoping that we can really stick with solutions, because I know this is a huge issue, but what we want to do today is really talk about the changes that need to be made and solutions. So if you can stick with that issue, we would greatly appreciate it. Let's go next to Jim in Berkeley. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks. Well, in the spirit of solutions, at the tail end of one of your shows last week or a couple weeks ago, it was pointed out that only about 25% of the 800-plus golf courses in California actually use any reclaimed water. So I was curious about that. And also, the role of Tom Hayden on Democracy Now!, it came out Tom Hayden is advising Jerry Brown on environmental stuff. And yet Jerry Brown supports fracking, and that just seems crazy and bad for our water. And finally, the underground storage, it seems like the whole increase in deep mining and then the settling of the land is closing in these underground reservoir spaces like forever. And so
All right. How
can we stop that without some big rush of doing a whole bunch right before some moratorium or something like that?
All right, thank you. Connor, do you want to take the underground storage question first?
You know, I seem to be at a disadvantage here. It blanked out. We had what you never like on radio is some silence on my end, so the technology.
Uh-oh.
So if you could repeat
Are you
the
not
question,
hearing any of the questions? Connor, are you not hearing any of the questions?
I'm not hearing the questions.
Okay. All right, Daniel?
I was lost in the wilderness there for a moment.
Daniel, are you able to hear the questions?
Yeah, I could hear it.
Okay, great.
I could maybe help Connor get in from the wilderness here.
Perfect. Thank you.
Well, I think as a general matter, hydrologists use the numbers that 5 to 10% of a reservoir evaporates every year. That's a lot of water. And it depends on climate and altitude and a number of different things. But we should be promoting underground water storage. Just because there's been some subsidence, it doesn't present an insurmountable problem. But it really points out, I think, a larger issue here. And the larger issue is, if you look for solutions, in the water field, we have put on a dunce cap. We've basically been – it's a very uncreative field. And we've been very cautious about trying to develop solutions. One Israeli expert refers to the water utility industry as being deaf and blind, and I think he's right. They haven't been innovative and creative in the way that they've approached solving water problems. We still use, build a reservoir, a levee, or count on gravity to solve our problems. And one of the things that we really need to do is try to get and try to promote with a new generation of water leaders creativity in the solution to our water problems. So, and there's a whole host of ways that we could adapt new technology and computing power and ability to be able to address problems.
And also, Connor, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I do, actually, because, we should be having no discharges, either off farms or off industry. We should be capturing and reusing and treating that water on site. So the traditional way is actually to get credit for wasting water. That has to change. And as was mentioned before, a groundwater bill where all the politicians patted themselves on the back last fall, just like our funding priorities and the water bonds, are mixed up because that doesn't come to full fruition until 2040. I hope I'm still alive, but we really have to step up because our groundwater is so depleted. At a certain point, it won't come back, and we've lost a huge resource, and that should be our priority. So to do that, we have to meter and monitor and not rely on satellites to tell us how much the ground has dropped.
We did a show about groundwater last week, and in some cases, these wells are the size of the Empire State Building. Thanks to a reporter we had on, Lisa Krieger of the San Jose Mercury News. She's got a great video showing what it looks like. Connor, what are your thoughts on the groundwater rules and how that will currently affect what we're seeing right now? And in some places, we're seeing the ground actually sinking.
Right, 30 to 50 feet. We're telling that, I'm tall, so I'm 6'6". If I put my hand up, it's over 8 feet. That's where some telephone poles have dropped to,
wow,
just so you can get a visual on it on the radio. But I have to tell you, this is like gun control. When I was president of the Groundwater Agency in Little Ojai Valley, we actually, at coming out of a six-year drought, late 80s, early 90s, we enacted one of the seven in the whole state groundwater agencies where we actually required, without charging them, without taking any water, we just wanted to monitor well meters or monitoring, which can be done through electrical usage. That allowed us to know how much was in the aquifer. But the local farmers, as progressive as the town was supposed to be, broke the windows in my house and my car. Until about a year later, with facilitation, we went through the process. They said, wow, these are great tools. Now we know how much water we're using. And I said, now we know how much we have left in the aquifer, and we can actually manage it correctly. So our biggest problem in California is managing water at all levels, and that includes getting our conservation levels down to where they did in Australia, which is 30 to 40 gallons per day per person. We're about 147 with the 25% down in the state, and in a lot of areas, well over 400 or 500 gallons per day per person, which is outside turf. So when I drove through the state last week, I've been going back and forth to Sacramento, I saw turf farms, very busy, and trucks with loads of turf farms. I saw in Montecito tankers of water coming and delivering water to a rich community and taking it to from a nearby community where they have groundwater. If you came from another planet, if you came from Arizona, you'd look at California and say, what is going on here? And that's why we need a revolution and change in California and water.
We also had a call about golf courses in California.
866 golf courses in the state. 216 use some level of recycled water. They should be 100% on recycled water, not drinking water. Golf is a dying game. Mark Twain said it's a good walk spoiled. I know there's people that love it. It's almost a religious fever. But the reality is this coming generation and others aren't taking to golf like they did in the past. And we have to think about maybe we can repurpose that as wetlands or some other usage where the water can go back in the ground. There's two in the San Fernando Valley that they're now beginning to use recycled water on in L.A. And they actually, in a big rain, the L.A. River, they close off the road, and those golf courses flood, and the water goes back in. But 127 in the Coachella Imperial Valley, really? That's how we're going to take our priorities in waters? That's something that has to change.
Do you know if Tom Hayden is advising Governor Brown on these issues?
You know, actually, I saw Tom the other day, and he actually had an excellent bill, SB 60, to require the Metropolitan Water District to report out on their groundwater conservation, recycled water, and even water ethics, which is something severely lacking in all these individual self-regulated water agencies. And I'd love to pull him back in, because it's kind of like the scene out of Annie Hall where he pulls out Marshall McLuhan to bring out the real facts. We need someone like Tom Hayden who's weighed in on these issues and weighed in democracy in America for some straight talk.
Connor Everts is co-facilitator at the Environmental Water Caucus. Their mission is to achieve sustainable water management solutions for all of the state's citizens. And Daniel Beard is former U.S. Commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation and author of Deadbeat Dams, Why We Should Abolish the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation and Tear Down Glen Canyon Dam. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Let's go next to Eric in Santa Cruz. Hi, Eric.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to talk about conservation pricing, which Connor, both your guests mentioned. And I live in Santa Cruz in the city, which has been getting a lot of press on NPR about how great we're doing conservation-wise, and that's really not because of the city officials. They do everything wrong. In fact, they signed on to agree to price at least 70% of their revenue come from volumetric pricing, so the actual amount of water you use, but they're way, way below that. And what they did during the drought is they slapped more fixed charges on. So no matter how much you use, they, instead of, making it based on the revenue based on the volume, they just slap more charges. So people who use less pay much more than people who use an average amount. But I wanted to ask about the Prop 218 lawsuit, and isn't it true that I understand the ruling went the wrong way, sort of invalidating some conservation pricing, but isn't it true that the marginal cost for water for new sources is a lot higher than the existing sources? So it really does comport with 218 to do tiered pricing. If I could get a comment, that would be great.
Okay, thank you. And who would like to take that one?
Well, this is Dan.
Dan?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I have a lot of confidence in the ability of the lawyers involved in this lawsuit to go back and make another argument that is going to be acceptable to the appeals courts. I think this issue is far too important to be lost with some kind of generality like that. I think that we are going to have changes in the pricing structure in communities across California and across the nation, frankly. And we will work you know, we are going to find solutions to this problem, and we will find solutions that will make it legal. I just have confidence that the people arguing this will be able to put forward an argument that'll be a winner with the appeals courts.
Can I weigh in quickly on this?
Yes.
Because unfortunately, I'd love to share the optimism, but we lost on appeal, and then the city of San Juan Capistrano is not going to take it to the next level. And then the next day, other consumers who turned out to be rich people living, ironically, on a golf course, not wanting to pay more for recycled water. But others are going to come out with the same idea that they're paying more than their share when, quite frankly, it's quite the opposite. So we're really going to have to rethink. If you do think of the net present value of water saved and the future marginal cost of other things like desalination, we would make some very different choices. We would have what they call on the energy side a loading order where you prioritize. But they don't want to even use those words on California water. We're about 20, 30 years behind energy management demand on these issues. So, and I do want to say that Santa Cruz did get down to 44 gallons per day per person. They voted down a desalination plant, and if you can't pay the fines, and they're one of the few places that are enforced with fines, you get to go to water school.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. We're getting a lot of emails about agriculture, about the meat industry, how much water is used to raise animals for meat. And I wanted to ask you both about how you think this issue is being discussed. We often hear that 80% of the water goes to agriculture. And according to the Pacific Institute, when you break that down, meat and dairy is about 47%, other agriculture is 46%. As you both know, almonds is getting a lot of attention. Alfalfa is close behind it. But when you look at how water is delivered, you know, how should this be framed, Daniel? Because let's say, for example, that's cut in half. Isn't it true that that wouldn't affect urban water users? Like if ag were cut in half, urban water users wouldn't feel the effects.
I you know, what you've been hearing is a very sophisticated spin doctors for the ag industry. In every single state in the nation, and particularly in the West, 80 to 85% of the consumptive use of water, which means when water is consumed, is used by agriculture, and generally 20% for municipal and industrial purposes. Even if you use and so what's happened is that wasn't very good for the ag interests, and they cranked up their PR machine and they came up with these numbers that said, well, we actually only use 40% and 50% is used for the environment. Well, my answer to that is, so what? That reflects a societal value. We want water to be allocated for environmental purposes for a whole host of reasons. And if you use even the ag industry's numbers, which is 10% for communities, agriculture still uses four times as much water. So it has four times, in my view, it has four times the responsibility to use water reasonably and intelligently, and has a greater responsibility to use water judiciously. So I think this has been a temporary PR spin as far as I'm concerned, because I've been working in this field for 38 years, and everybody knows, and we've always talked about it, the consumptive use of water, agriculture uses the most. And it's just always been that way and probably always will be. They could spin it any way they want, but most water is used for agriculture, and most of that water is used for the production of forage crops, which really comes back to dairy and cattle, or it's exported. One of the this is not very difficult. This is pretty easy.
And Daniel, we only have about 20 seconds left, but in terms of solutions on that piece of this puzzle, what would you like to see?
Raise the price of water. It's the most important thing you can do is raise the price of water, and suddenly you will find that people will use water in different ways.
Connor, 15 seconds. What would you add to that?
That we realize water is a finite resource in the West, and we deal with it as such, and we make sure that there's equity for everybody. And we give farmers who grow in the right places credit for what they're doing, and those who are looking at dry farming credit for going backwards, which may make sense because the world is changing, and we have to be part of that change, all of us together.
Connor Everts is co-facilitator at the Environmental Water Caucus. Daniel Beard is former commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation and author of Deadbeat Dams. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.